ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Economics.
And joining us for a look this week at business and finance matters is the ABC's business editor, Ian Verinder. Ian, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Evening, Phil. Good to be here.
Well, he did it again.
Yep.
Well, he says it's not him. He says it's the board. And maybe that's right. Philip Lowe's increased interest rates again, 12th time in a row.
Mm.
Many of people listening to this program and elsewhere will say, why is it that mortgage holders have to bear the brunt of these decisions? And they are bearing the brunt of these decisions. You say there's a bigger problem going on for Philip Lowe here, and it's tied up with the issue of real estate and also immigration.
Look, we have a policy of bringing a lot of people into the country, and that's putting enormous pressure on real estate. For the second month in a row, the Reserve Bank Governor, Philip Lowe, has mentioned the role that rising housing prices are having in their battle against inflation. Mm. And he's spoken extensively about rents as well. And that, you know, the Reserve Bank expects rents to rise quite substantially, and they already have, but further substantial rises into the future, and about 10% rises this year across the country. And of course, rent is the biggest component of the consumer price index. So that's the main measurement we use for measuring inflation. So if rent is the biggest component and it's rising at 10%, it's going to be very difficult for the Reserve Bank to try and bring inflation back into that target range of 2 to 3% when you've got the biggest component rising at 10%. So there's a huge challenge here. And I mean, last week, in the Senate estimates when Philip Lowe was up before there, you know, he was asked a whole range of questions on a whole range of issues. But when it came down to something he's been very consistent on, he said, and I'll quote him here, "We're going to have 2% more people in the country this year, but the capital stock is not increasing by 2%.
I know. Now, that's the thing.
Yeah. So, you know,
where is everyone going to live?
Yeah, and look, there's a whole range of arguments about this, and you know, you can be accused of being racist or whatever, but there should be a debate about immigration, and nobody's suggesting immigration's bad. I mean, we're all from immigrants at some stage.
I know, but there is no federal government official population policy. There never has been.
Yeah,
there never has been on either side of politics. No one wants to go there because there's an unholy cartel of governments and business who basically want a bigger population.
Well, that's
and
right.
No one else, particularly those who live here, ever get asked about it.
No, and if you read the financial press, you'll see, you know, business leaders just calling for more and more people to come in because it has multiple effects that really benefit business. I mean, you get a big increase in the size of the market so you can sell more stuff, so you make bigger profits.
Harry Triguboff gets to sell more units.
He does. And the other impact, major impact, is that more people, more workers puts pressure on the price of labour. Mm. And so, you know, labour costs, you know, go lower. Then if you look at the government, the impact on the government, it's very easy to say that we have presided over, you know, 30 years of continuous growth in the economy. GDP has averaged X percent over the past 30 years, except that when you look at it, the only reason the GDP has risen is because you've actually got more people. So, you know, if you and I are the economy and somebody else comes into the room, well, there's a 50% increase in the size of the economy because that person will consume more, they'll probably get a job, and, you know, there'll be this automatic growth equation that takes place. But it doesn't automatically mean that everybody's better off. Now, you know, there's another measure of GDP, which is per capita GDP, which essentially you take total GDP and you divide it by the number of people. And if you do that and you look at it, you graph it up and you look at it over the past 30 years, we've actually been in recession for quite a number of those years. And that's primarily because while you get the illusion externally that your economy is growing, if you look at it internally, not everybody is better off. In fact, most people are not as well off as they were at some stage in the past.
That's right. As you say, there does appear to be, if you look at underlying issues aside from housing, there appears to be a decline in activity. Inflation may well be going down. But in this area of housing, of course, it's not.
No.
And because of the problem that Philip Lowe identified, 2% more people in the country this year, but capital stock is not increasing by 2%. And no one really wants to mention it, do they?
No, and I mean, you know, as you said, there's vested interest there, and it's a really difficult issue to try and get across. But I mean, if you look at, you know, just the number of houses, the number of dwellings that have been built, going back to really even the mid-90s, we've consistently built far less houses than we've had people coming into the country. So it makes, you know, they've all got to live somewhere. I mean, you know, so they come into the country, you know, we don't have public housing like we used to back in those, back in the days where, you know, people went into hostel kind of accommodation when they first arrived. That doesn't happen. They land here. They've got to find somewhere to live. There's already a shortage of housing out there at the moment, and that just exacerbates the problem. Now, there's another, I guess, issue that defendants of, you know, a really high immigration policy come up with, and that is that, you know, particularly in this period right now, if the pandemic hadn't occurred, we would have actually more people in the country now than we've actually got, right, because people That's left true. The country. And that is very true. But in economics, it's not often about the level that you're at. It's about the change, and particularly the speed of change. And right now we've got this incredible speed of immigration, this rate of immigration that's coming into the country, more than 1,000 people a day. We're not building the number of dwellings that are required to house all those people.
In fact, according to your own figures, it looks as though we're only building about the same number of houses now as we were back in 1995.
That's right.
You know, that's nearly 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there've been peaks, and we did see a big peak back in around about 2017, 2018. Mm. From about 2015 on, there was a big lift in the construction, and you saw a lot of cities, particularly on the East Coast, where there was massive construction of high-rise dwellings that took place, and a major expansion there. But that started to drop off even before the pandemic hit, and it's now declining again.
Well, I mean, traditional market arguments would say, well, look, there are people out there who need dwellings. Why hasn't the market, you know, built them? Even given the lag times in real estate, I understand that you can, even if you decide to build more houses, it'll be several years before they appear.
Yeah.
Just given the nature of the construction business. But why has this occurred? There's money to be made in housing, obviously. Why aren't people making it?
Well, there's only so many builders, you know.
There can be more.
There can be more, yeah. But we have run essentially an economy that's based on digging holes in the ground and ripping out raw materials. And on the other side of the economy is really building houses for people. We've actually been building a lot of houses, but we just continually run an economy where you're bringing in more people where there's a shortage of houses. That's, you know, partly why, you know, some cities, Sydney in particular, are amongst the most expensive cities in the world when it comes to finding a place to stay, to put a roof over your head. You know, we're streets ahead of Vancouver, which is, I think, number two or three. You know, we're one of the most expensive cities in the world in Sydney, and most of the other cities are following hard on the heels of Sydney. Now, you know, the property boom that started early this year just defies all common sense, really. You know, we've had interest rate hikes pretty much every month for the past year. You would have expected that would have just really knocked the stuffing out of the property market, and it did for quite a while. And when it, you know, the Sydney market turned in February, which was the first, I think
everybody, and started ticking back up again.
Yeah, everyone thought, oh, look, it's a bit of an aberration. You know, it's just after so much heavy falls last year, it's just a stabilising, and it'll probably drop again. But it's really starting to climb quite dramatically. And now you're at a situation where in May, every single capital was in positive territory. They were back rising, and the regions were as well. So you've got a national trend for rising property prices during a period of the most punishing interest rate hikes in history. It does, you know, it's beyond.
Who's got all this money buying houses?
Well,
people already with houses.
This is the other unfortunate and unfair thing about raising interest rates to try and cool the economy. It hits a very particular portion of the population. So it's really having a dramatic impact on young people who bought in recent years. It's having less of an impact on, you know, those middle-aged kind of homeowners. But if for anybody older, like myself, for instance, if you've paid off your house or you're close to it, it doesn't really affect you that much at all. And there's a lot of people who are retired and who've got quite a bit of money saved up, and they're living the life of Riley. And a lot of them are actually doing far better because interest rates are getting back to a more normal kind of level. So there's a really, it's a really concentrated and very unfair impact that it has on the community, which raises the question of, you know, should we just be raising interest rates to try and slow the economy down, or are there other measures that we can take to try and do this?
Are there?
Well, there's a lot of ideas out there, including, you know, perhaps your money should be taken out of your out of everybody's pay packet and put into superannuation, or in, you know what I mean, some other way of taking money out evenly across all cohorts. And so that everybody feels the pain equally, rather than just simply lumping it all on a particular generation who we expect to pick up the ball and actually provide a living for us all at some stage down the track.
Mm. Yeah, the whole housing crisis, as I say, I think a lot of people, myself included, I find puzzling. Because a lot of it's not nothing to do with the federal government. It's really to do with local councils and state governments. As to what they permit to be built and the speed at which they can approve things to be built. And maybe there does need to be, you know, wholesale reform here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've read a lot in the last week and a half or so about, you know, we should, you know, free up planning, you know, make it a lot more, liberalise it all, take it out of the hands of councils. If you look at the experience in Auckland, it hasn't really resulted in any price declines. Mm. If you look at Vancouver as well, where they really did go hell for leather to try and get rid of all those planning restrictions, and there was an enormous build-up of high-rise properties and so forth, really flooded the market with a lot of new housing. Prices went up enormously. So it doesn't, it's not the easy fix that it suggests. And I mean, you know, there's this whole argument about NIMBYism and all the rest of it. Mm. And generally the people who say that, you know, live in probably quite nice houses, in quite nice suburbs, and would be the first to be up in arms if there was a proposal put forth to, you know, demolish their entire neighbourhood and put a whole series of 20-storey high-rises there.
Mm. Yes, although I think as a lot of people have said, maybe rather than high rises, maybe we should be thinking about medium level rises and medium level density rather than high density, and we could almost all established subjects, suburbs in Australia could do with more density.
Yeah,
not high rises, but more medium density.
Whatever, it requires a policy. It requires, look, we're going to have this many people coming into the country this year, new arrivals. How about we have a policy to provide housing for the people coming in? We've got a policy that will ensure that transport, for instance, we can move people around the city, we can school children, we can, you know, you need to actually have a coordinated policy to make everything work. Now, productivity is one of the other big factors that the Reserve Bank has been banging on about recently, saying, look, if we, you know, we can have wages growth, but we need productivity growth as well. Well, one of the big handbrakes on productivity is if you can't get from A to B, if you can't transport stuff from one place to another, that really starts to weigh on productivity. So, you know, you can, you know, I guess, choke your cities up with more and more people, and then take the, congratulations for keeping the economy growing. But if you don't invest and you don't make sure that you've got enough infrastructure to handle the increased population, well, it's all going to backfire, and it looks like it's doing that right now.
It does. Ian, good to talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.